Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, August 6th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. Democracy Advocacy Initiative activists were briefly detained in Harare today after petitioning lawmakers calling on them to impeach President Robert Mugabe over the missing $3.5 billion in public funds. The United States today took its first step towards constructing a new embassy compound in Harare.
This project is a tangible symbol of the United States of America's commitment to a strong and growing relationship with Zimbabwe, a relationship that is based on respect.
And local government minister Xavier Kasukuwere today took aim at alleged land barons in the ZANU-PF party, threatening to leave no stone unturned and making sure they are investigated and arrested.
Let's not use our positions to rob the poor and the weak in our society. Mm-hmm. Of us are now becoming land barons at the expense of widows.
Three members of the Democracy Advocacy Initiative were briefly detained at Parliament Building today after submitting a petition calling for the impeachment of President Robert Mugabe over the missing $3.5 billion in public funds. The three had gone to Parliament to distribute a petition to lawmakers in which they are calling on the House to remove President Mugabe from office following a report by the country's auditor and controller general that the government has failed to account for the $3.5 billion. Democracy Advocacy Initiative Chair Shepherd Chidakwa told Studio 7 it said that they were detained for speaking out about the country's resources and urging lawmakers to take action and ensure accountability in how the country's finances are used. He said officers at Parliament were asking them questions that had nothing to do with the petition.
Direct from Washington, the Voice of America, VOA.
The United States government today took its first step towards constructing a new, bigger embassy compound in Harare. Ivan Chifera has details from the capital.
Speaking during the groundbreaking ceremony at the site in Westgate, U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton said the new compound will cost the American taxpayer an estimated $200 million. He said the new embassy would help open pathways for mutual respect and understanding between Harare and Washington, adding it will also increase the flow of business and investment between the two countries.
This project is a tangible symbol of the United States of America's commitment to a strong and growing relationship with Zimbabwe, a relationship that is based on respect, on understanding, and on mutual interests. In the medium term, it should be a development node that will encourage growth in the northwestern suburbs of Zimbabwe. In the short term, this project represents job creation, materials supply, and skills transfer for the hardworking people and businesses of Zimbabwe.
Construction of the project, that will be spearheaded by the State Department's Bureau for Overseas Buildings Operations, is expected to start in the next few months. Constructors will take at least 3 years to finish building the embassy. Ambassador Wharton said the embassy purchased the land for the new compound in 2001. The ambassador commended the Zimbabwean government for its cooperation and making sure the project is a success. When complete, the new compound will house the embassy and all its departments. The embassy is currently operating from various rented premises in the city. Harare Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni said the development by the American government is welcome, especially in a city where there is little or no development taking place.
Almost every city you go to, you see cranes putting up high-rise buildings. That's one thing we don't have in this city. So any development that you find taking place in Harare is very, very, very welcome. Now, here we've got a signature development. It's the U.S. embassy. It's the U.S. government. It does a lot for confidence for the city, for the country, and for locally for Westgate. This area is going to change because of what's going to happen in the next 3 years.
Harare resident Simon Takawira, while complaining that the new embassy would be far from the city center, where residents can easily access, said it was a welcome development.
This place is very far away from town and it's not centralized, because we have some people who come as far as Budiriro or Damafos who want to access their visa offices. But with this distance, it's too much for people. I don't think most people waste a lot of money trying to access this point.
Minister of State for Harare Metropolitan Province, Miriam Chikukwa, local government and foreign affairs officials and embassy staff attended today's groundbreaking ceremony. The United States has maintained an embassy in Harare since 1980. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The new local government minister, Xavier Kasukuwere, today warned land barons in the ruling ZANU-PF party that they will soon be exposed and arrested for their part in causing confusion on the housing market and cheating desperate home seekers of hard-earned cash. Kasukuwere also said his ministry will soon cut the huge salaries being earned by top council managers through the country so meager resources can be channeled into service delivery. Arthur Chigoriwa has more details from Chinoy.
Speaking today in Chinoy, Kasukuwere, who is on a tour to meet council officials in the country, says ZANU-PF members should stop using their positions to rob desperate and poor home seekers of hard-earned cash. The minister, who also doubles up as the ZANU-PF National Commissar, said no one will be spared in his investigations and possible prosecutions. For years, home seekers have had to buy land from companies owned by ZANU-PF officials who have themselves been given land for a pittance by ZANU-PF controlled councils. Some, it has been alleged, were just parceling out land to themselves for a song. Kasukuwere said the police will spare no one despite their party positions.
And I want to warn all of us, let's not use our positions to rob the poor and the weak in our society. Mm-hmm. Some of us are now becoming land barons at the expense of widows, at the expense of child-headed families. It just can't work. We've got to have a human face. ZANU-PF is not a political party of thieves.
Kasukuwere also delved into the controversial issue of huge salaries and perks being earned by council bosses around the country. He said his ministry is reviewing and will soon be announcing new salary structures so resources are channeled to service provisions more than salaries. He said the current salaries are too high for struggling residents to sustain.
Let's do what makes sense. You can't have somebody earning $22,000. When your collection is about $70,000 per moment, what is that? My residents are asked to visit China. My residents are asked one and four everyone. My residents are Anan, Gobaru, Senza. But someone threatens us that I have labor laws that will look after me. Come on, my foot. What labor law are you talking about?
The minister said his ministry has started dealing with what he said were wayward councillors who are in the habit of misusing council funds in unapproved allowances. He named two Gweru councillors whom he has already fired for the offence, adding he will soon be publishing a report from investigations into the issue. Kasukuwere also warned companies, especially mining firms, to pay their dues to councils to lessen their financial problems.
These are the indigenization of our economy. Our people must benefit from their resources.
Yes.
Foreigners cannot eat more than us. This is our country. We put them through. This is how we're going to run our country. So there is no apology. We have suffered already. Enough is enough. Our economy is going to go up anyway. We just want our farmers to work hard, to succeed on the land, and we are going to be who we are.
Kasukwere used his time in Chinoy to reinstate Chinoy town clerk Mundororo Mazai and the Chinoy mayor Test Michaels, who were fired by councillors 2 weeks ago. Reporting for Studio 7 in Chinoy, this is Arthur Chigoriwa.
Don't kill the lion, don't kill the lion, don't kill the lion.
A Zimbabwean academic who assisted Oxford University researchers in taking Cecil the lion killed last month by American Walter Palmer says the big cat's death has been a blessing in disguise, as millions of people the world over are now calling for urgent steps to stop the hunting of lions in Africa. Professor Peter Mondi, head of the Forest and Wildlife Faculty at Zimbabwe's National University of Science and Technology, believes that although Cecil met his brutal death in Wange, researchers and ecologists have been energized in fighting against the decimation of local lions, estimated to between 1,500 and 2,000 in private and state-owned reserves in Zimbabwe. Professor Mandy tells Studio 7's Gibbs Duwe such overwhelming international response and outcry over Cecil will assist academics in carrying out more research on lions and other animals.
Unfortunately for Cecil, who is now dead or hanging on somebody's wall or wherever he is, he's done a fantastic job. The person who shot him, your Dr. Palmer over there in America, is now, I believe, on the run, has done a wonderful job for carnivore conservation, because he's brought the whole issue into the open, because he happened to shoot a very beautiful and rather special male lion. So I think Cecil, we'll see in retrospect, that Cecil will have done a good job for us.
But do you think that maybe this is going to be some kind of hype and it will just fall away? Is it going to be like that for good?
I don't think so. We've carried on with elephants and rhinos, wild dogs, birds, vultures, wattle cranes, now the lions with Cecil. You remember with the elephants in Kenya, there was a very famous elephant called Ahmed that was on, I think, Mount Marsabit. So I would believe myself that if you can find an animal that symbolizes, or an individual rather, that symbolizes the whole species, like Cecil the lion has done it for lions and carnivores in this country, I think that's useful. And although we can bemoan that Cecil himself is dead, by dying in the way that he did, he's left a good legacy for us.
That was Professor Peter Mandy, head of the Forest and Wildlife Faculty at Zimbabwe's National University of Science and Technology, speaking with Studio 7 from Bulawayo. According to Oxford University, its Wildlife Conservation Research Unit had been tracking the famous lion's movements by satellite since 2008. Meanwhile, the 2015 Mandela Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders ended yesterday, and participants from Zimbabwe and other countries headed back home today. But before they did, VOA caught up with some of them to get their views on Cecil the Lion and whether his death means anything to them. First, we spoke with South African Hlaisani Nkwashu, Thabo Ncalo, Shane Donald Vemutan, Daphne Sarah Hallett, and Andile Clifford Biela, and Zimbabwean Yvonne Gila. And this is what they had to say.
For a young man like myself from the Fafling rural area, I mean, we have had cases before of people like slaughtering lions, slaughtering wild animals. It's like I was so surprised to find out, like, the way the media, the international media, has sensitized this, because this, for me, it's not happening for the first time. It's not for the first time to see something like this. So I was so surprised how America perceive, like, or how they take environmental issues very seriously. I've learned so much from it. I think it's something that I will have to look at it. I still have to study about it, because it's new to me. To me, it was normal, because in my village or in our country, for somebody to slaughter maybe a wild animal, it's not a big deal, because to some of us, it's a meat, you know. It's just a meat, you know. It's not a big deal.
It's one that's interesting, but I think it also takes away the focus on the real issues, you know. I think the issue of wildlife is important, that preserving wildlife is very important. So, I mean, I don't think we want to see a lot more people. I mean, I'm personally of the view that we shouldn't be hiding, you know, hunting some of these lions and species, rhinos, etc., that are out there. But I do think we shouldn't also divert from the attention of, you know, helping people in Africa, in Zimbabwe, fixing the political situation in that country. And I think we're spending too much time on Cecil the Lion as a campaign, as opposed to working on, you know, the issues in Zimbabwe and issues across the continent.
The crazy thing about Africa is if you look at the last month, the two biggest stories to come out of South Africa were Cecil the Lion and the young American who got attacked by a lion and eaten in South Africa. So it shows that this is the world's perception of Africa, is that we have lions and they're running around and they're eating people. Now, while that was sad, there's so much more going on, but that's all the world sees. Shame, poor Cecil. I mean, it's very sad. I'm distraught that Cecil's gone. Generally, a lot of Africans are not that keen on hunting. I myself am not that keen on hunting. I don't like shooting animals. I'll eat them. I won't eat lion, but I'll eat springbok, but I won't shoot the springbok.
I have very strong views about Cecil the Lion. There are a lot of people who believe that hunting like that is good for our economy, but it's not. It's not good for us to be farming our wild resources out for people to kill. And in fact, from a genetic point of view, it's disastrous. So I think it's shocking that he did that. And I think the worst part about it is that he's done it in other places in the world and was allowed to get a hunting permit. Somebody knew that and they still gave him the permit, knowing that he's been charged in other places.
I would say that, like, say no to the killing of lions, but the need to preserve, the need to preserve for tourism or something like that, but not really, because I don't really know the process, so I would just say it's very important for us to conserve the our nature.
Those were Yali fellows weighing in on with their thoughts on Cecil the Lion. Still with the Yali, Studio 7 reporter Tatenda Gumbo gives us her final report on the young leaders.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Sorry about that. We'll bring you the Yali story much later. But for now, coming up, why do Zimbabweans remain in South Africa despite xenophobic fears? But first, we take a look at regional and international news. Egypt has offered a major expansion of the Suez Canal that President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi has billed as a historic achievement needed to boost the country's ailing economy after years of unrest. France's defense minister announced today that his government reached an agreement with Russia to cancel a contract for the sale of two Mistral-class warships to Mr. Putin. And Malaysia's transport minister says additional airplane parts have been located on Reunion Island in the Indian Ocean, where a piece of the wing from the missing Malaysian jetliner was recovered last week. As advertised earlier on, here is Tatenda Gumbo with the final piece on Yali.
The 500 fellows, including 30 Zimbabweans, capped off their program with a closing ceremony yesterday where they were addressed by Undersecretary Richard Stengel of the Department of State for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs and Linda Thomas-Greenfield, Assistant Secretary in the State Department's Bureau of African Affairs. Thomas Greenfield told the VOA the 2015 program was a huge success.
It's been so exciting. It's been electrifying watching all of these young people who are working to change the world and contribute to their country's success. It gives me so much hope.
She says she has great expectations from the young leaders, adding they have so far proved that they are prepared to hit the ground running upon their return back to their homes.
My expectation is their expectation. I hope that they are successful. I hope that they go into the communities that they came from and they help to contribute to people's lives being changed.
Speaking on the $1 million awarded to 40 of the Mandela Washington Fellows by the United States Africa Development Fund, Thomas Greenfield said judging on the projects from the alumni class of 2014, the young leaders will make a significant impact in their communities with their $25,000 grants. Zimbabwean Andrew Chikomba, one of the 40 fellows to receive the grants from USADF, along with his Zimbabwean colleagues Kudakwashe Makuzwa and Farai Chizengeni, feels honored to be one of the recipients. Chikomba, who is currently the managing consultant at Gemwitz Enterprises, a green solutions company he founded in 2012, says he will use the money to expand a project in which he's working with rural youths.
We are empowering the youth by training them on entrepreneurial skills and helping them to set up their own businesses within their local communities so that they can sell solar products and also conscientize the public in their communities about the benefits of solar.
Chikomba, who returned to Zimbabwe today, said his experience in America with the YALI program has been beyond empowering at both personal and professional level.
We've met a lot of people who have given us advice, mentored us. In some instances, some partnerships and deals have been struck. So there's a lot of new projects that you'll see coming up over the next few weeks.
His sentiments were echoed by Rosalind Sachiti, journalist and features editor for The Herald, who says she is proud to have represented Zimbabwe on the grand stage of YALI.
I'm happy that we came here. We represented our country well, and we told the story of Zimbabwe from a different perspective that you don't usually see from the international media. And we also got a lot of information, like from America.
She adds that professionally, she has been able to grow over the past a few weeks.
One of them is the issue of design thinking on how, as young people, and also some of us who are interested in business or even in the media, can use the skills we've learned here to empathize with societies, to define what societies really need when we want to give them a product.
Sachiti and Chikomba, along with 26 other Zimbabweans, returned home today after their time here in the States. Two Zimbabweans, Yvonne Jila, a filmmaker, and Tinodiwa Zambe Makoni, an animator and graphic artist, will remain in Atlanta, Georgia and Washington, D.C., respectively, for an additional six-week internship with companies in their sectors. And speaking to his fellow Mandela Washington fellows and young Zimbabweans back home, Chikomba summed it up by saying,
"It's time for people to step out of their comfort zones. Do not be afraid of failing. You just need to fail fast, get up, move on, chase your dreams. Anybody can make it. We all have the potential, and I believe that the time to do it is now."
Reporting for VOA Studio 7, this is Tatenda Gumbo.
Millions of Zimbabweans are facing serious problems such as xenophobia in South Africa and have over the years endured a lot of abuse at the hands of locals, including employers, police, and the Department of Immigration. Our correspondent Benedict Nhlapo speaks to some of these Zimbabweans to find out why they would prefer to risk being killed in xenophobia attacks than be safe back home.
The term xenophobia scares millions of foreigners, including Zimbabweans living in South Africa. Some of them witnessed the killing of 62 people in 2008 and recent xenophobic attacks that left seven people dead and thousands homeless. Some South Africans claim that foreigners are grabbing all jobs and operating businesses which are supposed to be for locals. Despite these sad memories, most Zimbabweans have vowed to stay put in South Africa, saying there is no democracy in their homeland. Dumisani Leah, who has lived in South Africa for many years, says to make matters worse, the Zimbabwean economy is almost collapsing.
Dying from xenophobia is a better way of dying than dying at the hands of the Zimbabwean government. Death has never stopped people from seeking a better life because they are looking for better economic opportunities. So the solution to the whole thing of Zimbabweans coming to South Africa is by improving the economic situation in Zimbabwe.
Hundreds of Zimbabweans left South Africa following xenophobic attacks in 2008 and sometime this year. Arnold Ngala says the majority of his colleagues who fled the attacks are now back in South Africa.
When they go back, they find that the situation is still the same. It's still unstable. So they see themselves again, coming back again to South Africa. So even if there can be 2 million people that can be killed and 2 million can go back to Zimbabwe, as long as the situation does not change, the same 2 million are going to come and risk being killed this side because there is a higher opportunity of living this side than on the other side of the border.
Ngala says lack of jobs and general freedom will force them to stay in South Africa.
Even if people go back, it's not like they want to come back to South Africa. But the environment that they found themselves into, the instability of the politics and the instability of the economic situation is forcing them because people have to survive. So now if people are finding the environment not conducive for them to survive, they are forced naturally. It is a natural thing to look for greener pastures.
Big Foster Nkomose echoes the same sentiments, noting that their lives entirely depend on Zimbabwe's ruling elite.
They come silently underground because they're running away from government, corruption and everything. We know there's no clean government, but they need to try. Not even an animal can live there. There's animals that you can't find anymore.
With Zimbabwe now rated by some organizations as one of the world's poorest countries after 35 years of self-rule, most Zimbabweans say only fate will determine their destiny. Reporting for Studio 7 in Johannesburg, this is Benedictine Hlapo.
Workers' unions are skeptical about the announcement made yesterday by ZANU-PF that the labor law will be amended in an effort to curb job cuts that have seen more than 18,000 workers being laid off within 3 weeks. The party spokesman Simon Kayamoyo told reporters that ZANU-PF's Politburo yesterday agreed to review the law to contain a possible crisis in the labor market. However, he could not say when the proposed changes will be tabled before a parliament with a ZANU-PF majority. Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Union Secretary General Japhet Moyo told Studio 7 they are not taking the proposed amendments seriously and are therefore going ahead with their planned protests penciled for Saturday to pressure government to take action on the job cuts.
We take it with a pinch of salt. We have not been advised as social partners at the TNF that this is what government has decided to do. In our view, maybe they are trying to pacify people so that people don't participate in the coming demonstration on Saturday. The issue of the amendment has been ongoing for the past 6 years. Government has always been saying we are amending the Labour Act. For the past 6 years, they've been dragging their feet. But I think the focus now has been to restore jobs on the thousands and thousands of workers who have lost their employment. That's our focus. These amendments, these talked about amendments, are not going to restore those jobs.
But it would appear that this time around, the government is planning to do this as a way of curtailing these job cuts. What's your take on that?
Yes, the proposed amendments obviously will curtail the job cuts, but as earlier indicated, the focus on labor was what happens with those who have been affected.
That was Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Union Secretary General Japhet Moyo speaking on the phone with Studio 7 from Harare. Unfortunately, that's all we have for you tonight. But remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 live talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts on the Women's Forum, Praxedis Jeremiah and Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, will lead discussions about the government's move to ban second-hand clothes. And now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Chris Gande signing off.